we hear this particular gospel and the reading from Leviticus, which Jesus quotes, might actually reveal a lot about our individual religious perspective. We might actually be convinced that the world's more complex than it was for Moses and the children of Israel in their 40-year wandering around in the wilderness. That for us, well, we just can't let the widow, orphan, and immigrant help themselves to the product of my or her. That it isn't fair for them to just take the gleanings of my fields. Or maybe we think our world is more complicated than when Jesus and his disciples were traveling around the Judean countryside. That it was somehow easier for them politically, with the Roman authorities and military keeping close surveillance to be sure the large crowds wouldn't turn into a mass demonstration or something. Or maybe we believe Jesus was just exaggerating a bit. No one could possibly actually be willing to be slapped and offer the other cheek to be hit also. And after all, be ye perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect is what we might call perfectionism. Really, taken too far, it's some kind of obsessive compulsive thing. No one's perfect, and certainly no one's as perfect as God. And people, well, same people anyway, know this to be true. So why, in today's passage, is Jesus setting us up for failure like this? Be perfect just isn't possible. You know, everything hinges on that word perfect. But that's our translator's choice of word. In the original, the word is teleos, Greek. And while it can mean perfect, it's more in a sense of completion or wholeness, or that which accomplishes the purpose for which it was intended or designed. Kind of puts a different spin on it, doesn't it? Be whole and complete as your heavenly Father is whole and complete. And another thing, the you in this passage is plural, not singular. So, as my Southern Seminary classmates would say, who translated, y'all be whole and complete as your heavenly Father is whole and complete. Now, next Sunday is, of course, the last Sunday after the Epiphany. And the gospel reading is every year an account of Jesus' transfiguration on the mountain in company with a few of his disciples. And as I've mentioned before, the Eastern Orthodox Church views the transfiguration as kind of a icon for Christian life. The idea is that each of us, we all, over the course of lifetime of Christian practice, will be gradually transformed into the likeness of God. They call the process theosis, and it's never completed in this life. But it's the way we become complete, whole, perfected. It's the way we become the most true version of ourselves, the persons God intends us and already knows us to be. This perfection, the goals we seek are God's teleos, unity, love, reconciliation. Not the world's goals of living up to expectations or achieving control or popularity or success or money or individual recognition. Notice one thing, Jesus certainly didn't live up to expectations. The Messiah was supposed to be a military leader, kicking the Romans out, re-establishing a Jewish kingdom. All through our readings in the Epiphany, Jesus has been telling and showing us through the Sermon on the Mount that he came to fulfill the law, not get rid of it. He came to show us how to go deeper, deeper than the requirements of Leviticus, how to get at the whole person, not just the behavior. And as we hear over and over again, it's not done alone. It's done in company with other people. And it's done without regard to rank, or station, or entitlement, or deservingness. not about following all the rules properly or perfectly or just giving up because they're too hard. It's about walking with Jesus step by step, bit by bit, slowly, gradually becoming a little more generous, a bit more tolerant, a smidge more forgiving, a touch more brave about setting out toward what God is calling each of us and all of us together to become, to be in the world, and to be with those others that we encounter. Some years ago, my husband and I were at Mall of America in Minnesota, which is like Destiny, except even bigger. It sells all sorts of fabulous toys in this one store. And they had a display of a rock tumbler. You know, it's a machine with like a rubber drum and a small motor. You might even have had one at some point. I didn't, so I was really excited to see it. And you put these cranky stones that you buy or maybe that you find into the drum with some water and some sandy sort of grit, and you let it tumble the stones with the water and the grit for a really long time. And then you repeat the process with increasingly finer grit. And ultimately, those stones come out all shiny and polished and far more beautiful than when they went in. And it seems to me that our Christian life together and the world we live in is kind of like that rock tumbler. The abrasiveness of our circumstances in a complicated world, and let's face it, the abrasiveness of other people with their conflicting views and needs, and our own shortcomings and failures and sins. Over time, and with prayer, and with our certain-to-fail efforts at really following Jesus, at being ambassadors of God's love in the world, that effort, those processes, shape us into something beautiful.